This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about channel marketing in calendar weeks 27 and 28. Frenes is a B2B market research partner helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description.
And if you're listening to this, you probably know how incredibly complex the channel marketing world is right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, imagine spending 6 months courting this massive tier one partner, right? You fly out, get all the complex contracts signed, you throw this huge launch party.
Right, the whole song and dance.
Exactly. Only to realize a year later that your own internal sales reps have been, well, actively stealing deals from that very partner just to protect their quarterly commissions. It's madness.
It really is. And that's why we're doing this deep dive today. We're looking at the brutal reality check hitting ecosystems right now, pulling the sharpest insights from mid-2026.
Yeah, because we've scoured the top channel marketing trends seen across LinkedIn in weeks 27 and 28 to give you the most focused, actionable intelligence. We want to be your shortcut to what's actually working.
And I'll just say it up front. The old days of simply, you know, managing partner lists, handing out bronze, silver, and gold badges, that is entirely dead. The mechanics of the ecosystem have completely changed.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if we look at the first major theme from this week's insights, it's all about ecosystem strategy and how AI is completely changing where the money flows.
Yeah, the economics are shifting incredibly fast. Jay McBain brought up some staggering numbers recently about this generational shift. Big tech isn't just funding standalone products anymore. They are pouring hundreds of millions into ecosystems.
Wait, really? Hundreds of millions?
Oh, yeah. Like Google committing $750 million, OpenAI doing $150 million, Anthropic $100 million. It's massive. Because enterprise buyers, you know, they no longer ask what a product does. They ask what it integrates with.
Right. The integration is the product.
Exactly. We've entered this era of micro-consumption. It's not about selling a 5-year monolithic software license anymore. Buyers are purchasing tiny slivers of computing power and AI processing by the minute.
Which means the economics are totally different. You don't just sell it and walk away.
Precisely. In a consumption model, the initial sale is just the cover charge to get into the club. You only make actual revenue if the customer stays on the dance floor day after day. And direct sales reps just can't sit next to the customer every day to ensure they're using the software.
But partners can. I mean, that perfectly ties into what David Wilson was talking about. He noted that the last mile of AI is going to be entirely partner-led.
Because AI is just a raw capability, right?
Exactly. It's just a capability. The partners are the ones actually embedding it into the client's workflows. They're the ones managing the human change, dealing with company politics, all that messy stuff.
Yeah, they make the AI actually functional for the enterprise.
But hold on, I have to challenge this a bit. Because for decades, the entire goal of B2B marketing was to build a moat, right? Lock the customer in, key competitors out. If integration is the main buying criteria now, doesn't that mean B2B marketing is no longer about selling a moat around a product, but selling a bridge?
That is exactly the paradox. What's fascinating here is how David Maurer approaches this. He argues that keeping things out is the fastest way to starve an ecosystem today. He talks about this concept of gravity.
Gravity, like pulling things in.
Exactly. Ecosystem success has shifted from just orchestrating partnerships to actually operating an ecosystem. When you operate it, you have such strong budget and authority that you create a gravitational pull for opportunities.
So it's not just project managing some co-marketing campaigns anymore.
No, not at all. It's having the P&L authority to fund a partner's proof of concept or building native API hooks into the tools your target accounts already use before the partner even asks for it. You pull the pipeline into your orbit. Okay, I love that. But if you have that gravity, the natural next step is figuring out how to actually execute those deals, right? I mean, pulling in opportunities is great, but if you fumble at the finish line, it's useless.
It's completely useless. And that transition from high-level strategy to street-level execution is where most programs just fall apart.
Yeah.
This leads right into the realities of co-selling.
Yeah. Let's get into co-sell and marketplace execution. Andrew Bricher had a great post about this.
He did. He was very blunt. He said co-sell isn't a strategy you just build. It's a byproduct you earned through trust and execution.
I saw a perfect real-world example of this from Amy Marino Kim, specifically regarding Microsoft partners. She pointed out that average partners will walk into a room flaunting their certifications and their gold tier status.
And the direct sellers just tune that out
completely. Oh, totally. High-performing partners walk in with customer outcomes and business value. Microsoft sellers don't want to manage another partner relationship. They have massive quotas that just want to problem solve. Exactly. If you can tell the seller, hey, we know how to modernize the specific client's legacy infrastructure so they can actually use your AI tool, you become invaluable.
You solve the friction. And we're seeing this exact need for execution play out in the cloud marketplaces, too.
Oh, massively. Patricia Codescu shared some takeaways from an AWS panel she moderated in London. One of the partners there reported that 40% of their business now flows through the AWS marketplace.
40%? That is a huge chunk of revenue.
It's staggering. But it doesn't happen by accident. Vince Mencione gives some really solid advice on this for Google Cloud and AWS. He warned that you don't win by just listing your product in a catalog like a digital storefront.
Right. You can't just put it up and wait for the phone to ring.
Exactly. You win by doing the reps on your first 5 to 10 deals alongside the hyperscaler's field team. You have to prove the co-sell motion actually works.
Wait. If co-sell is an earned byproduct and not just a standalone strategy, how does a B2B marketing leader actually put that on a quarterly roadmap without relying on pure partner altruism? Like, you can't just hope people become friends.
No, you absolutely cannot scale on hope. Stephanie Hovely-Lloyd broke this down perfectly. She said you survive by creating strict commercial alignment. Everyone needs to know exactly what's in it for them.
The famous economic triangle.
Exactly. The vendor needs efficient scale and lower acquisition costs. The internal seller operates on a 90-day clock and needs to hit quota quickly. And the partner needs high-margin advisory services attached to the software.
So if the software margin isn't there, they need to make it up in services.
Right. If the answer to what's in it for me isn't mathematically clear for all three of those stakeholders, the entire engine stalls.
So what does this all mean? Because you can have all the marketplace listings in the world and you can have all the gravity. But if your partners aren't actually activated and motivated, it's basically just theater.
It's 100% theater. And this brings us to our final theme. Partner activation, lifecycle, and trust.
Yeah, and this is where we get into the real metrics. Lincoln Axon and Corey Jonikin were talking about this, and they hit hard on the idea that the only metric that matters now is activation velocity.
Right, not just partner count.
Exactly. Not just pointing at a slide full of partner logos. Activation velocity is the speed from signature to first revenue, because growing a partner list without activation just scales complexity, not revenue.
Alex Richards shared a great perspective on this from his time at Quantum Metric. He said, and I love this quote, a signed agreement creates potential. A first deal creates belief.
Oh, that's really good. A first deal creates belief.
Because that first win is when the partner's technical team actually sees your product work and their CFO actually sees the margin. But you have to engineer that win. Richards highlighted the need for a highly structured 90-day onboarding process.
You can't just hand them a portal login and say good luck.
No, you need overlapping pipeline reviews from day one to drive that first joint opportunity.
Having a massive roster of unactivated partners sounds exactly like buying a fancy gym membership, but never actually working out. It looks great on paper, but zero results. But let me ask you this. Whose fault is it when the partner stops running?
It's almost always an internal governance failure on the vendor side, and this gets into the darker side of things, like partner churn.
Yeah, Tushar Ranka posted about the warning signs of partner churn, and it's actually kind of chilling because of how quiet it is.
Silence is a huge red flag in partnerships.
It is. He pointed out that the signs show up long before an email is sent. Deal registration slows down, there's complete silence in the shared Slack channels, and then suddenly, unannounced team turnover on their end.
And why does that happen? Greg Portnoy and Thomas Harker address this head on. It usually comes down to a lack of compensation neutrality.
Explain that for the listeners because it's a huge issue.
Okay, so imagine a direct sales rep gets a 10% commission on a deal. If a partner brings that same deal in but takes a 30% margin for their services, the vendor's net revenue drops.
So the direct rep's commission drops too.
Exactly. They just lost money for collaborating, so they bypass the partner to save their own margins. That lack of compensation neutrality actively incentivizes direct reps to steal deals.
Which just instantly destroys trust.
Completely. And Thomas Harker added that deal registration needs actual teeth. Almost every program has a portal, but very few have an enforced escalation path with leadership accountability.
So if a direct rep steals a deal, nothing happens to them.
Right. And if there are no consequences, partners simply lose trust and stop registering deals entirely. They just walk away.
Wow. Okay, so we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We've gone from the big picture AI economic shift and microconsumption to the hard realities of earning co-sell momentum in cloud marketplaces.
It's a lot to process, but it's all connected.
It really is. And finally, we got into the brass tacks of getting partners to actually close their first deal and why trust is so fragile.
Yeah.
I think the overarching theme for B2B marketers listening to this is clear. No more fluff. You have to build operations, not just programs.
Could not agree more. You have to build the operational engine.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, AI in B2B marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Definitely go check those out.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next breakdown of the market.
And as we move into this AI-driven ecosystem era, ask yourself, when your partner strategy fully succeeds, will it still look like a partner program with a separate budget? Or will it become so embedded in how your entire company operates that the program itself vanishes into the very fabric of your business? Something to think about.